but I used to draw the Beatles and their different eras and phases. And I had a little like manila folder that was like Atticus's Beatle folder.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Powell. And here on the Peach Jam Podcast, I get to introduce you to incredible Georgia musicians, from hometown favorites that you already love to brand new voices you're about to discover. It's my job to find different types of people and different types of sounds from all over the Peach State. This podcast is a mix of performances and down-to-earth conversations, all recorded live at the GPB Studios in Midtown Atlanta. More than 60 years after the British invasion, that influence is still alive and well today. Let's welcome Atticus Ronis to the Peach Jam family.
Check it, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, look, I can count, guys. 2, 3, 4, and 5. It's called the number song.
My name's Steven, I'm the drummer.
I'm Radley, I play bass.
I'm Caleb, I play guitar, and I also produce.
I'm Atticus Ronis, and I write some songs, I sing, play guitar, play keys, and I'm originally from New York, but was raised north of Atlanta in Woodstock, Georgia, and I play power pop for the time being.
What does power pop mean?
Well, I mean, to me, I think it comes from the 60s. Obviously, I think the Beatles are at the forefront of that, and I really think that it's just, pop to me is melodic, it's sweet, and I think it's catchy, and it's obviously somewhat marketable. And then the power part is what excites me, I think, is adding these like more angular guitars or, you know, different layers of things, kind of mixing things up, taking pop and sort of just adding an edge to it, I think. And that's always interesting to me because sometimes pop is too clean for me, but there's some stuff that's too heavy. And I think the marriage of the two is really appealing to me. And I think taking something that's beautiful and sort of, you know, texturing it a little bit, and I think that's nice, and power pop does that extremely well. And you know, like I said, the Beatles, Cheap Trick is a power pop band, and then there's a whole slew of them in the 90s, and even today there's some great ones, excluding myself, there's some amazing power pop that's being made. I wish it was more of a mainstream genre all the way through, but it's definitely had its moments, and I'm very happy to have made an album that I think falls in line with that sort of genre and style.
I was never one to dance. I was never true romance.
So there's definitely times where, yeah, you hear the Beatles influence, like, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the 90s, because there was definitely some, like, 90s type, like, reminds me of Blind Melon a little bit. Tom Petty is what David, our sound supervisor, suggested. I hear a little bit of, this is an obscure reference, but Polaris, who did the theme song for Pete and Pete that was on Nickelodeon.
Uh-huh.
Are you just nodding your heads, or do you know?
I do. And I love that record because this is a funny story. When we were in Athens, I sometimes like to hit up the Georgia Theater. They do a lot of rooftop shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Polaris was playing at the theater. And I love that album so much. And not a lot of people know that record, so that is an obscure choice. But anyway, so I hit up the theater. I was like, I love Polaris. Would love to, you know, play on the roof before them. Find out it's a heavy metal Polaris, completely different band.
So
I was stuck with the gig, which is still fine and good. I'm glad I played it, but I was really hoping, it was kind of sad that it wasn't that Polaris.
So you were mistaken as to which version of a band was playing there at the Georgia Theater, and you thought it was more of like a power poppy something.
Yeah, it was not at all.
And you did what? This music is in front of a heavy metal show?
No. It was on the rooftop before the show. So like fans of the show before the show starts, but after doors have opened, they go upstairs and they hang out. And
yeah.
There's a band playing. So yes, I did play in front of heavy metal fans. You know that sort of head boppy '60s power pop stuff.
Yeah.
But they did like it, and I think that goes to show like most people are multifaceted and like different things. And mm-hmm. I'm sure some people hated it and went back downstairs. But we definitely had people out for that one. I don't remember when it was. But I really thought it was that other Polaris, and they would have loved it, I think. So it's what it is. You can't win them all. But
Atticus, you grew up in Woodstock. What about the rest of the band? Where are y'all from?
I am from Decatur, Georgia.
Okay.
So a little bit outside of Atlanta.
We're from Macon, Georgia. Both of us are from Macon.
Okay. Yeah. All right, y'all are from Macon. And then what brought you up to this area?
School.
Yeah, we both went to Georgia State.
Okay. So how did you find each other?
In my last band, my bass player was their roommate.
Okay.
When the album came out, there's definitely some feeling, my brother and I were in that last band together, and there was a feeling that my brother and I were probably gonna go different ways creatively. Mm-hmm. And I also think Zach was letting me know that he was on his way out. And so with that in mind, I didn't even know that Radley was another great bass player living with Zach. So then the three of us started playing together. And I remember like missing my brother playing those songs. But there was a chemistry that the three of us had that was certainly undeniable musically, and we were writing pretty quickly, and I knew there was something there, but I was still kind of focused on my other band at the time, obviously, but I was like, I'm gonna keep that, compartmentalize that for later if something goes down and happens. And so then when I went solo, I immediately knew who my band was gonna be. And we've been playing together since, I don't know, like April 2023, I think, May 2023. They're the best band a guy could have, obviously, and also I call them all my friends, which is a plus as well. So, but yeah, that's how we all got here.
So is this a full-time job?
Well, speaking for somebody who has like 2.5 jobs, I do 2 different jobs.
Okay.
And then I book bands.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So it's really like, to do this right, it is. That's the truth. And so I'm up late, obviously, one of these jobs, and then at these jobs, I'm trying to do my best there, but I'm also like emailing people, and I'm trying to book gigs, and I'm trying to post stuff. I have to post on TikTok like a million times a day. That's not an exaggeration. And then I'm at another job, and I'm doing so. I mean, if you want to do it really well and you want to make a career out of it, I totally believe it should occupy all of your brain space all the time. It's not the healthiest thing. I wouldn't recommend that mm-hmm. for your mental health, but. You know, I think if you want to be great at something and you want to do it full time, it's going to take some years and some time where you're going to be uncomfortable and you're not going to want to do it all the time. And because everybody can get up there and play. That's the fun part. But I always tell people that are like, because I've been in, like I said, been through it a lot and like played in a couple different bands, a lot of different bandmates. Everybody loves the 20% where you're playing and people mm-hmm. are cheering. That's mm-hmm. 20% of it. There's booking, there's recording, there's planning, there's promoting, there's money that is spent like an insane amount. It's like I'm working 2.5 jobs. I'm like, where is the money? mm-hmm. Where did it all go? And it's going to this and this. And but I wouldn't trade it for the world at the end of the day, because I feel like I have something as a songwriter and as a performer, and I feel like it would be a disservice to myself primarily, but the people around me also, to not pursue that, because I think passion is very contagious, and I think especially in times like we're living in today, I think that's very hopeful, and I think it's very positive, and I think that kind of energy is important to put out in the world, and I think that I do that and partake in that kind of energy doing this. And so it's just something that I feel led to do every day. I don't really know why all the time, but you know, just get on my guitar, write a song, and I remember. So yeah, it's a full-time job for sure. So yeah, 3.5 jobs, basically. The half is a booking agent thing. I just do it when I have time. But, you know, I get them gigs and they, you know, they play them and I make a little something on the side, which is nice. So pays for my dinner.
So I have to admit, so the email that came in introducing me to you, Atticus, came from Mockingbird. Was it Mockingbird?
Mockingbird Talent Agency, yeah.
Mockingbird Talent Agency. So that was the email. I responded to it. I know your name, like we've talked and whatever. It was literally about 10 minutes ago I put together the fact that your name is Atticus and your company's name is Mockingbird Talent Agents.
Clever. Yeah. There you go.
There's people laughing in the back. Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Like, I, you had finished playing the music and I was like, oh.
This guy is Mockingbird.
Yeah. I'm on to something.
Okay. His name's Radley.
Yeah, and his name's Radley.
Yeah, I know, and his name is Radley.
When we found that out, I was like, there's no way.
Yeah. Boo Radley. Awesome. If To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad you dropped.
I wasn't the only one.
Glad you dropped the hint. Yeah. Yeah. Subtle hint.
Oh, yeah. It just, okay.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like I named it on purpose.
Right? Almost.
Yeah.
That is amazing. What a coincidence. I love that. I fell in love when I don't have the money. But I'm working extra hours just to build you a home. Just standing there. Oh yeah, you're looking so pretty. But I'm tripping all the wire. They told me not to cross. No, they're lost. 'Cause I'm in love. Perfect moment, so they don't exist. At least that's what I thought. But now that we're here and the message is clear through the dark, now we're lost. I want to know about where music started for each of you. And we could start in the back. Let's start with Radley.
Both of my parents are musicians, so they've always done, you know, my whole life they've done that. And then I started when I was five with Laura Voss. That was my drum teacher.
Yeah.
Shout out Laura Voss.
Okay.
Shout
out. Is she in Macon?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice. Steven, how about you? Where did it start?
Similar thing. My dad did music when he was in like college and high school. Like he was in punk bands and stuff. He actually was in one band, and their drummer was Larry Voss, Laura Voss's brother.
Yeah, it's a family affair.
So yeah, and then I, we went to the same high school, and she was the band instructor there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've both played drums for years. We were in the band together.
What high school was this?
Stratford Academy.
Stratford.
Okay.
But yeah, I grew up in a house with lots of music, and my brothers also played. Like one of my brothers was in the marching band playing the snare, and I was like, oh, I should do that. Then I played the kit, and here we are, you know.
I owe the Voss Sibs a great deal.
Huge drummer family.
The Voss siblings taught.
They're both
the
great
rhythm
drummers.
Section I mean, here, yeah. Yeah, everything you need to know.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. And Voss we trust. The water.
For me, neither of my parents were like that into music or really musical at all. It was just something that I kind of enjoyed as like a hobby for most of my life. Like I picked up the guitar after just trying out some like classical guitar lessons where you're like sitting like this and doing the whole like nylon string thing. And I was like, I don't like this. I just want to figure out how to do it myself. And so I just started writing my own music in my mom's basement. And it was just like a hobby thing until I moved to Athens, which up until that point, I had told myself like, okay, music's gonna be a hobby unless I can find some way to like make it tangible, you know? And Athens was kind of my, like, my starting point for that. I just met a lot of great people and musicians like these guys, and they're very gracious and welcoming. I mean, I would say that most people that I know have had much more experience than I have, but I've been fortunate enough to be, like, welcomed into these circles and, like, really get to do what I love. But yeah, most of, I would say that Atticus and all of us share, like, a really huge background of the Beatles, like we talked about earlier. And that's kind of where it started for me. I wasn't really interested in songwriting or anything until I heard the Beatles for the first time when I was like 14 or 15. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to figure out how to sound like that. And so it's just been an eternal chase since then.
Mm-hmm. You're one of, like, a bajillion people who have had the exact same thought.
Have we got
thought.
The number on that? Is it a bajillion?
Yeah, I think that's official.
In the span of history, possibly.
Yeah. I was just standing there. Oh, yeah, you're looking so pretty. Oh, oh, does it ever happen? Is it real at all? Because I'll fall. Atticus, how about you? Where to start?
Well, something I found out later in my life, which is cool. So neither of my parents can play music at all. Not even. My dad thinks he can. He plays like one note of the piano, Lean On Me by Bill Withers. He plays the same part over and over again. I was like, I guess it makes you a musician. We can call you that. But I found out later, my dad was adopted. He was born in Canada and was raised in New York. But something we found out later about his, so nobody in our family, like nobody in his Brooklyn family, nobody on my mom's side of the family played any music at all. He's a music lover, but there's no trace of any musicians in our family at all, except his biological parents from Canada. His mother was a singer and the father was an organ player. They met in the band, which is pretty cool. So there is music in our blood, just not, you know, I wasn't aware of that growing up or didn't know anything about that, but that's a cool fact. But my dad is 100%. Well, both of my parents have been very supportive of my career the entire time. That's been unwavering and definitely the reason that I feel so confident to choose this path every day and to continue to make music. But my dad, I remember car rides with him almost every day, especially on the weekends. And there was no, like, Atticus, choose the radio. That was not happening. Mm-hmm. It was, we're listening to Queen today. You know, we're listening to The Clash. Here's some ELO for you. You know, it was only 60s through 90s music. And to this day, like, there are albums that I've gotten into as an adult that I, like, that he would do a lot of the time. He would play an album and then, you know, he's got like a block of four songs he really likes, skips a few, and then another block. And that's almost how I remember the album. And to this day, like, I'll like the whole thing, but I have a special connection to those blocks of albums. You know, whether it's London Calling by The Clash or Night of the Opera by Queen. I just never fought it. I never wanted to, like, I want to play my music. No, I just embraced him and the music he would play. And I mean, he was very into it and would, you know, tell me about the bands as much as he knew, which he doesn't know that much. But at the time, he knew it all to me. It was explaining that, you know, the band members, and I would read the, you know, CDs, and I'd read the liner notes, and I got obsessed. And I have an obsessive personality in that way. And to this day, I mean, those albums that he showed me, I know everybody that played on them. I know when they came out. I know all the nerdy stuff. And so I think that had a big impression on me. And then, like everybody saying, the Beatles, I remember being an eight-year-old. I don't draw at all. I'm terrible at it. But I used to draw the Beatles and their different eras and phases. And I had a little, like, manila folder that was like Atticus's Beatle folder. And I would, like, put Beatle memorabilia that I found. Like, if there's a Guinness Book of World Records, I would tear out the Beatle page. I had, like, you know, most records sold or longest note held. Mm-hmm. I'd rip those out and put it in there. I'd put my drawings in there. And so they've been a constant for me, because as a young kid, like, a lot of that All You Need Is Love stuff, and with a little help from my friends, is very fun. Yellow Submarine, it's fun. It's colorful. It's it's it builds a world for a child, I think. And mm-hmm. then when you get older, you're like, oh my God, like these songs are insane. And so that's always been with me. And I've had different phases, you know, especially through like my teen years, from like 13 to 18, I had a lot of different music I was really interested in. But they never left. And then specifically during COVID, I was always into music, but I kind of leveled up in terms of my dedication and commitment to it. And they re-entered my life just as much as they did when I was 8 years old. And so, I mean, I'm probably more obsessed with them now than I ever have been. I mean, that's my rule book for this stuff and, you know, how to write songs. And to this day, I have this like complete Beatles chord book. That's my Bible. You know, mm-hmm. I keep it by my nightstand. You know, that's my, if I'm ever just bored and I don't want to play something on my guitar, I just open it to a random page and start playing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a little bit of that.
I'll just stand in. Oh yeah, you're looking so pretty. Does it ever happen? Is it real at all? Real at all? No, no, 'cause I'm in.
You've been telling me about this obsession of music that you have. I would imagine that comes in handy when you work at the record store.
Yes.
So
yes, nice
Atticus
segue.
Works at the, it was a good segue. Mm-hmm. Atticus works at the record store like 2 miles from my house, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Mm-hmm.
It's a great
so,
store.
Yeah. So you do you get to just like everybody
oh,
thinks
yeah.
get to geek out over music?
Oh yeah. It was that job was like instrumental for me finding like stuff that my dad didn't raise me on, you know, because like obviously he raised me on the pop and the like the pop rock and all that stuff, and then I got into like whatever was happening at the time from 13 to 18. I got into the modern music of the time, but the record store is what made me go back to mm-hmm. stuff that I missed that my dad just didn't know about or didn't care to know, specifically like a lot of soul music, a lot of jazz music, a lot of reggae, a lot of, you know, I mean, even pop rock that I didn't know that wasn't popular, because my dad, you know, didn't grow up in the technological age. He couldn't be responsible for stuff that he didn't see in Rolling Stone magazine or on the radio or, you mm-hmm. know, that his friends didn't show him. So I've been fortunate enough. I remember when I first got that job, when it was slow, I would just go through each section and find the covers that I liked, and I would just put it on the turntable and see what happened. And some of them I hated, and I took note of that. And then some of them I loved, and they, you know, become albums that I really cherish. And so that was a massive deal for me, exploring and discovering music, and did not help my wallet during that period because my vinyl collection grew immensely.
Sure.
But I'm proud of that I've also been able to collect different stuff, and I really enjoy that, and having the physical media, and it's a nice centerpiece of my house or my apartment, so that's nice. But yeah, I love that job, and it's been very good to me, and we switched locations from the Battery, and now we're in Marietta, and I still like it. Very much, and learn a lot from being there every day.
We have to say the name of the record store.
Waterloo Sunset Records. Great store in Marietta.
Yes.
Based off the Kinks song, Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah, it used to be, right there by the Battery, but it still exists and it moved over.
And now it's closer to both of us, which is dangerous.
Yes, it is very dangerous. It would be cool to get a part-time job at a record store.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
I could do that.
Yeah, just stop by and drop your resume off. Peach Jam Podcast at the top.
Yeah, I'll do that. Mm.
Side note, this is Jeremy from the future from the interview that you're listening to. Sad news is Waterloo Sunset Records has closed. I encourage you, if you have the means, go to your local record store and buy some records.
support your local record store.
Now we need to go apologize now for last year's wife. A stick of soul stones could ever break my bones over last year's wife. There were times when you treat me badly, but I know that I don't deserve. Oh no, oh no, your last year's wife.
Producer, and still he mixes my records, Christopher, always would say when we were doing takes, he would say, just keep going till it gets worse. And I kind of use that advice in everything. Like, I'm going to keep going until I feel like the results are worse or I'm getting worse and I'm only getting better. So that's enough for me to keep going. Money's nice, notoriety's nice, whatever. That's all nice stuff. But I don't do it for that. I do it because I love it. And whatever happens from there happens. But I do think passion's contagious. And I think that it's something that people are drawn to. And so I think I have that. And I think that'll serve me well in the future, like you say.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, you can catch all three songs from Atticus Ronis start to finish on GPB's YouTube page. And don't forget to leave a quick rating and review. It helps more than you know. And if you like what we're doing here on Peach Jam, please tell somebody, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell that guy at the record store that you're gonna go to this weekend. Tell your kids' teachers, whoever you can find, let them know the good work we're doing here at Peach Jam. And if it's your first time here, I invite you to go back, listen to some of the other episodes. You might just find that your next favorite band lives right down the road. This is the final episode of Season 5 of the Peach Jam Podcast. Be on the lookout for the TV side of things wherever you watch Georgia Public Broadcasting. Also, I have some bonus episodes coming up in this feed. Those episodes give me a chance to catch up with other members of the Peach Jam family from previous seasons. The Peach Jam Podcast is produced, edited, and hosted by me, Jeremy Powell. If you want to recommend an artist to be on the show, send me an email, peachjam@gpb.org. Sandy Malcolm is our executive producer. Mark Davenport is our associate producer. Recording, mixing, and mastering by David Spence and Victoria Evans Cash. Special thanks to the team at Sounds Good. Find us on Instagram at Peach Jam Podcast and look for Peach Jam on TV wherever you watch Georgia Public Broadcasting. In the meantime, please support live local music and independent record stores in your area.